Podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
And what is up, everybody? It is time for another edition of Pulse of the Pack. I am Jason Perrone of Cheesehead TV, and I believe Jacob Westendorf is here in some capacity. I see him on the board, but I cannot hear him. Jacob, if you're out there, I can't hear you, and I'm assuming neither can anybody out in Packers land. So try giving us a call back, and let's get this show on the road, my friend. Nobody hosted like you do. But in the meantime, to fill the space here, before we begin the show, I want to give a big shout-out to our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing. Mark Mayfield does such a fantastic job sponsoring the show. He's been with us for three seasons, going strong. And anytime you want to add some spice to a party, like our ad says at the very beginning of our show, by adding a Packers player to your party or event, keep Mayfield Sports Marketing in mind, and, of course, Waukesha Sports Cards as well. I think Jacob is back. Let's see if we can bring him on and make this a true Pulse of the Pack.
I am Jacob, here. Are you with us? I am here. Can you hear me now, Jason?
I can hear you now. I am going to absolutely love the introduction if we both did a full minute worth of content and both of them recorded at the same time.
I do not believe, as soon as you said that you could see me and couldn't hear me, I stopped talking. So the good news for you is you have about 10 seconds of me yapping. But I didn't get to hear most of your intro, but as I mentioned in my little blurb, if you guys heard that, this show is the first of its kind since our reboot. It is not victory whatever day anymore. The Green Bay Packers lost in a game that it really is the worst kind of way to lose. You wait all day for Sunday night football. You're amped up to watch your team play, and then they just lay an egg. The last game I can remember quite like that was Green Bay was in New York a couple seasons ago, and they just got dominated by the New York Giants. I waited all day for Sunday night, as the song goes, and I watched the Packers lose 38-10 to the New York Giants in a game that really kind of resembled this one, in my opinion. None of the players looked particularly interested. Jason, you mentioned to me really right from the jump that running out of the tunnel, Aaron Rodgers didn't look right. And I remember thinking during that game against the Giants that Rodgers didn't look particularly interested in playing that game. Now, that's all theory and speculation, of course, but that's just what we saw. But before we get going on football, and we are going to break down that debacle that we saw on Sunday night against the Denver Broncos, there was a story that broke that we didn't really get to address, and that was the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel coming out with a story on LaTroy Guyon and his past domestic violence issues. Now, for those of you, the short version of this is LaTroy Guyon struck a woman in the jaw once upon a time when he was playing with the Minnesota Vikings. The story came out and essentially rehashed the police report that surfaced around that time. Mike McCarthy called that article garbage, quote unquote, and said he was not going to address it because he thought it was garbage. And from there was a story that surfaced that Rob Davis, a person within the organization, was bullying, quote unquote, those are the words used, a reporter, and that reporter was Cohen. Cohen said that he went to shake his hand and that Rob Davis said, quote, I don't know you and I don't want to know you, and kind of gave him a lot of guff for writing the story. Now, that's kind of the short version of the story, and I don't have a whole lot of time to break the whole thing down. But, Jason, you said you had some thoughts on the whole thing. Essentially, my thoughts on it is that, you know, a lot of people are like, should they cut LaTroy Guyon? And my theory on that is the Packers had to have known these things about him when they signed him the first time. And if they didn't, then that's, irresponsible by them for a lot of reasons. They're not going to cut him now because this surfaced, and it's clear that they are 100% behind Latroy Guyon. Now, whether that's right or wrong is up for debate. Jason, what are your thoughts on the whole Mike Cohen, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel bullying and the Green Bay Packers?
Well, yeah, and, you know, I kind of asked this segment into the show today because you and I talked about it and whether or not we were going to even address it, because it's we're recording this show on Thursday. We're 4 days removed from this last game. We're getting close to this upcoming game, like you said, and the Cohen story actually broke during the bye week. So it's been almost 2 weeks since it came out, and so it's kind of run its course, and we kind of debated whether or not we want to talk about it. But I feel like, you know, we want to at least give our show its moment to kind of address the issue and at least give our listeners our take if any of them happen to care. So, you know, for all three listeners that we have out there, and I'm joking, of course, you know, I look at this situation here, and I don't have an issue necessarily with the journalism that the story was written. My issue is with the timing of it. I just don't understand at all, and I'm not alone here, and I've heard a lot of, you know, obviously by now we've had a lot of analysis and a lot of shows have talked about it. I don't understand why it was written when it was, because there wasn't any new information that was shared, you know. I mean, I was talking with Chris from Tenletown Sound Off, you know, one of our sister shows, about it, and, you know, he basically alluded to the fact that, you know, no, there was no new information shared, but a lot of information was all put in the one place the first time, and so there was more comprehensive look at the scenario between Guyon and his past transgression. You know, I don't understand what there was to gain from it. Bill Johnson on Green and Gold Today show yesterday said that it was a gotcha story. I agree. You know, I think from that standpoint, it's kind of garbage, because what are you trying to accomplish? And then, you know, Rob Davis, who is the former long snapper for the Packers during the Brett Favre era, who's not a small guy, he's a big guy, you know, really basically used his size and his presence on the sideline to try to kind of send a subtle message to Michael Cohen that the team and he didn't appreciate the distraction and the issues that story caused, while this team is trying to prepare for a great season and a great run. And then they also have worked so hard to portray this image that, you know, they have the Packer way and they bring the Packer people in, and we use the term Packer people. And this just kind of lifts up the curtain. And, you know, we all see the Wizard of Oz working the controls behind the curtain, so to speak. So, you know, that was the part that I wanted this to kind of address, was that I don't agree with the timing of it. And I don't understand why it was done. You know, the one thing I will say is, as you said, that, you know, the Packers had to have known that Guyon did this before they signed him. I want to cite the Michael Vick situation back in 2007, when the Atlanta Falcons caught wind that there might have been a problem with Michael Vick and dogfighting, and they asked Michael Vick, and this is a different investigation process, obviously, but they asked Michael Vick what was going on. He gave them false information. They had false information. They didn't know all of the facts at the time. Ultimately, those facts came out, and they decided they had to part ways with Michael Vick, and he ended up going to prison. So I don't necessarily fault the Packers for not knowing everything there is to know, because I don't know what obligation the legal system has to get that information to the teams. You know, I don't know if there's any special provisions in the CBA that say teams are entitled to certain information and they should have known this, you know, both the Packers and the Vikings. But we have to decide, and this is kind of the last point I want to make about it, and then we can talk about football and move into Denver and everything else. We have to decide why we watch football and why we watch the Packers. Okay, are we looking for a bunch of Boy Scouts on the field? Or are we trying to watch a game for entertainment factor? Because I can tell you right now, in any sport out there, they're scumbags. And I know that's a very harsh term to use, but there are scumbags in every single sport. We don't know these guys as people. We don't know LeBron James as a person. We don't know Derek Jeter as a person. There are all sorts of things about these guys we love on the field. They do all the great things. They do all the great PR. We don't know Aaron Rodgers as a person. I am sure there's somebody who's had a personal interaction with Aaron Rodgers over the past couple of years who probably thinks he's a jerk. I mean, we just don't know what these guys are like. And I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is truly a person. But we have to kind of decide here, do we want to rage on with the debate of the Packers need to release Guyon because he did this? For what? To prove a point of what? That, you know, we really do only have Packer people. We really only do bring – I mean, this isn't the first time they brought a guy in that was troublesome. And, you know, another good example of a player that, you know, when you don't know a guy, because during his career, both on and off the field, he was reveled as a veteran and somebody who was good with the community and a great part of the game and was possibly going to be a Hall of Fame player, may still, I don't know, is Darren Sharper. So, you know, we don't know these guys as people, but are we here to run a Boy Scout camp, or are we here to watch these guys play football? I'm not saying it's okay to treat women that way and be abusive, but, you know, that's just kind of my question I want to leave everybody with is why do we watch the game? And ultimately, LaTroy Guyon is a football player for the Green Bay Packers for 3 hours on Sundays. He's allowed to be on the field because the NFL says he's allowed to be on the field. He's already served his time for something else completely unrelated to this. You know, this just cast further, you know, negative light on him. I didn't understand the timing, and that was it. Just wanted to get that out there. Back to football.
Yeah, and the one thing that I will say, guys, is, you know, as an aspiring journalist, one thing that we also need to understand is the guy did what he thought was doing his job. He thought there was a story. Now, whether or not you believe that's a story or not is subjective, but we can't fault someone for doing their job either. And the Packers as a whole have been very close to the vest in terms of things they'll say to the media, things of that nature. It's just an odd thing. Jason, I thought you hit it on the head very well. We don't know these people as people. You know, I always say athletes aren't role models. You know, parents or firefighters, military people, those guys are the people that I think should be seen as role models, not football players, because how many times have we seen people let us down? You know, a story comes out and, you know, person X appears to be a really good person and they're in legal trouble. One other guy who, you know, you mentioned and he's adored throughout Packerland is Brett Favre. And, you know, I mean, I love Brett Favre. Brett Favre was everything football was to me. He's the biggest reason, one of the biggest reasons, along with Reggie White, that I'm a football fan. He really started my interest in football and specifically the Packers. But Brett Favre wasn't exactly a choir boy either, and that became more and more obvious as his career wound down. Even during his career, you saw some stuff. He was, you know, obviously battled an addiction with painkillers, had some issues when he was with the Jets, and this isn't a, you know, a smear campaign on Brett Favre, so to speak, but it's just another reminder that there are going to be guys in this league and on every team that are, as the word you used, and it is harsh, but it's a fact, they're scumbags. And I'm not calling person XYZ a scumbag here because, you know, I'm in no position to do things like that. I fully understand none of us are perfect, and I will not pretend to be either. However, that whole Packers people thing, I do think there was some value in the story that was written by Bob McGinn later about how the Packers people thing, I don't know if it's a complete 100% sham. However, there is some value in saying, you know, they have brought in other guys. Colt Lyerla had plenty of issues, and it was a win-at-all-cost kind of move. Colt Lyerla was a low-risk, high-reward because they could just cut him if something happened, and something did, and he was released. Johnny Jolly had his issues with drug addiction, selling drugs, things of that nature. Now LaTroy Guyon here, you know, the Packers people thing, yeah, they'll say it, but it isn't necessarily 100% true. But as you stated, this is a football show, and we want to get back to football. Wanted to address that just in case you guys cared about our take on that situation at all. I don't expect the Packers to cut LaTroy Guyon or anything along that nature. I do wonder if maybe this bad press or such will play into whether or not they choose to re-sign him again at the end of the season. That all remains seen down the road. But the season is still going, and the Packers, as I mentioned, got hammered by the Denver Broncos on Sunday night. And really, it was a game that I don't think the final score indicates how lopsided of a game this was. The Packers did score a touchdown, but it was after a roughing the passer penalty kind of allowed a drive to extend, and they scored from there, but they really didn't do much else. They didn't offer any resistance. It was really ugly in all facets. And the first thing I want to start with is the offense, because Bill Huber said it best. The Packers' offense isn't good, and it hasn't been for a while. Now, we joked, you know, early in the season that we may just start every show with the segment of Aaron Rodgers is amazing, and while that's still true, he's still very good. I don't think he's gotten worse as a quarterback, but this offense isn't good. The Packers in their last four games have scored 17 points against the San Francisco 49ers. They scored 17 offensive points against the Rams. They had 7 on a pick six. They scored 27, which was a pretty good number, against the San Diego Chargers. And then they scored 10 the other night. That's not the kind of production you expect for an offense led by a former league MVP. So, Jason, what I'm asking here first is it time to finally admit that, at least right now, this offense isn't good?
I wouldn't go that far. I don't mean to sound like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, because they've still won 6 games out of 7. So their defense has played maybe above its capabilities and what we expected before the season started. But the offense, I mean, they've only gotten 7 points on defense this year. So all the points they've scored this season have virtually come from the offense, whether it was 17 or 30 or however many. At the end of the game, all that matters is that you have one more point on the scoreboard than the opponent. So, no, it's not the same brand of offense that we're used to seeing with the fireworks and the shot plays and Jordy Nelson streaking down the field and Randall Cobb with massive runs after the catch and Devontae Adams like he had in the Dallas playoff game. But they're still finding ways to win games, and it's convenient for everyone to harp on the offense after a terrible showing that they had on Sunday, and which led to their first loss coming off of a bye week. It's just, you know, we're not used to seeing that from the Packers. You know, we're not used to seeing them come out as unprepared as they were. And, you know, I'm going to kind of go blue here for a second, because the word I use to describe the way the offense played, and frankly, the entire team played on Sunday night, is dog shit. And you're not going to hear me say that too often, but I throw that term out there because they played badly on the field and they looked like they could have cared less. Like you said, Jacob, earlier in the show, very disinterested in playing a game. Not all 22 guys were there to accomplish the same goal. And that's really disappointing coming off of a bye week when you're already undefeated and this team has got some special capabilities and some special things on the horizon if they do the right things. But, you know, they've got to make some tweaks, obviously, and they've got to make some changes. I wouldn't say the offense is bad, but, you know, we're running out of you know, excuses here, because they got Devontae Adams back. Lacy's still playing. He's got the bum ankle, which is obviously affecting him. But he had a couple nice runs against Denver that we haven't seen for a few weeks in games that they've won. So, you know, I mean, Nelson's gone, but what else is the excuse? Because it's the same offensive line that was dominating last year. They're not this season. Richard Rodgers is 1 year smarter. He's not effective at all at the tight end position. You know, but they got production there last year, and you can't tell me Andrew Corliss is the missed piece. So, I mean, there's really not a lot of excuses, other than if you really want to try to tell me Ty Montgomery swapping out Devontae Adams was a huge step back, and I think they're just not getting production from the bottom of the depth chart at wide receiver either. But no, I mean, it's not good. I should say it's not great. I would stop just short of saying that it's not good, because again, Aaron Rodgers runs the offense, and anytime 12's behind center, team's got a chance to win.
I agree with that to a point. One thing I will say is I was watching some stuff from past seasons and such, and things that the Packers have really just gotten away from. It almost looks like they're trying to run this vertical passing attack, but they don't have the vertical guy. And the vertical guy, of course, is Jordy Nelson. And you mentioned Devontae Adams. He only had two catches, I think, if that. He wasn't exactly effective in his return. And I do want to give some credit to the Denver defense. I feel like that's been lost in the shuffle here with, you know, obviously the storyline is Aaron Rodgers threw for under 100 yards passing, which almost never happens. But, I mean, Denver's defense is very good, and I do want to give them some credit. However, I've seen lesser defenses control the Packers' offense for the most part. Now, one thing I would like to see when Ty Montgomery comes back, and he did practice today in limited fashion, I'd like to see some more diverse personnel. And what I mean by that is the Packers run with three receivers, a tight end, and a running back almost exclusively. One of the things Mike McCarthy was constantly praised for early in his tenure as the Packers coach is the formation diversity, different things that they did. Now it really looks like just this guy's over here. There's two guys on this side, two guys on the other side, a running back's behind me. Sometimes we'll spread them out a little bit and throw the running back out there, which I honestly do think that's a waste of a spot to split Eddie Lacy or James Starks out. If you want to do something like that, I feel like that you'd be better served going four wide or even five wide with an empty backfield when everyone is healthy if they want to do something like that. Now, one thing I want to see, like I said, is more formation diversity, and I do think that one thing that will do that is putting Ty Montgomery on the field, leaving Eddie Lacy in the backfield, and taking Richard Rodgers off of the field. And this isn't a Richard Rodgers smear campaign. I'm not trying to make him the scapegoat for the offensive struggles. However, they're asking
Jacob,
Richard Rodgers to be
smart. You're smearing everybody all over the show tonight, man. Brett Favre, Richard Rodgers, it's the smear show. I kid. I joke.
Yeah, just wait till we get to the defensive portion of the show, too. But they're asking Richard Rodgers to do things he shouldn't be asked to do. Richard Rodgers is not going to be man-to-man coverage. He's not fast. He doesn't play faster than his combine speed, which is something that was said to be possible. He is what he is. He's a good zone beater. He'll sit in the zone. He'll get you some tough yards, and he'll be a big body in the red zone that'll help you there. That's what he is. The Packers need to start beating man-to-man coverage. And in order to do that, you're going to need more speed on the field. I really think if they can throw Cobb and Montgomery in the slots on each side, I think that's a more effective way to use that. I could be wrong. I'm certainly not Mike McCarthy. I'm not Tom Clements. I'm not some offensive guru. However, I do think there are some things that I can see, and you can just logically think. I mean, Denver didn't have to come out of their base defense to guard the Packers. And that, frankly, is a little embarrassing with a passing attack because they used to get nickeled and dimed. I'm using that expression, but it really was true. The other teams would have to play nickel or dime, and they'd get out of their base, and they could run against that. Now they can't even do that because Denver could keep their base defense on the field because a linebacker can run with Richard Rodgers. Ty Montgomery is faster. He's athletic. He's had good hands for the most part so far in the season. And I think that there are some things they can do that will allow them to free up Montgomery, Randall Cobb. I really think that there's a lot of benefits across the way. Now, I don't want to say that Davante Adams hasn't lived up to his billing because Sunday's game was only the second game he started and finished completely healthy. So far this season, Davante Adams has 10 catches and no touchdowns. That's not something I expected. However, when I am told all offseason by anybody that's willing to talk at Packers Hall there at 1265 Lombardi Avenue that this guy is a star, and star means star production. And they were saying those things before Jordy Nelson went down. As soon as Nelson went down for the season, they needed star production, this guy, because they were replacing a superstar wide receiver with him. Davante Adams needs to get going. Now, I'll still give him some time to do that. However, he really is the guy that has to go because you know what you're going to get from Randall Cobb for the most part. You know that James Jones, all he does is catch touchdowns is a joke on the show, but it's starting to become really a real thing. That's really the effect that he had on the team. He had one catch the other night. It was a goofy ball spot because they said he gave up forward progress, which I'm not so sure that he did. But, you know, whatever. That wasn't going to be the difference in the game one way or the other. But James Jones is not going to run by people. He's going to surprise people. He's going to catch some underneath passes. And he's going to score touchdowns when we get into the red zone. That's where the Packers' offense needs to start thriving. They need someone else other than Randall Cobb that they can rely on to beat some man coverage. And I do think Davante Adams can be that person. One thing that's come up, Aaron Rodgers mentioned some need for scheme changes. And then on Monday, Tom Clements said Rodgers needs to throw them open. So, Jason, what I'll ask you as soon as I'm done is how you feel about that. How I feel is it's a combination of the two. I feel like that there are times where, and I saw it during the Bears game, which was the first game of the season, where the Packers offense really was reliant on, hey, Aaron, go make something happen. And I said it during that game that that is not a reliable way to do offense. And you saw why on Sunday, because teams are going to focus on that. They're going to try and keep Rodgers in the pocket. Well, Rodgers can't make plays happen with his legs if there's nowhere to escape. I feel like there needs to be more routes over the middle of the field, which I feel like there weren't a whole lot of. Receivers do need to get open. However, Aaron Rodgers does also need to understand that a receiver doesn't have to have 5 feet of separation to be an open receiver. There are some plays where I feel like a receiver is relatively open that Rodgers needs to just throw the ball in there. So I feel like it's a combination of the two. Not only does Rodgers need to throw people open, but the receivers also need to get a little more separation and start beating some people. Jason, what do you say on the wide receivers need to get open / Aaron Rodgers needs to throw them open debate?
I think it's true. I think you kind of hit on a lot of the points that are most valid. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers is who he is, and zebras, you know, it's the old saying, zebras don't change their stripes. So, you know, as good of a quarterback as he is and as smart as he is and as much as he practices and prepares and obviously makes changes at the line of scrimmage and, you know, he's obviously able to adapt in game. We've seen him adapt, you know, and make changes when needed. For him to change his outlook, you know, I mean, that's a tough thing to do in the middle of a season. So, you know, I think your point about what is open is important for Rodgers to keep in mind, and I think he's going to probably have to start, if he doesn't already have confidence in his receivers, and I know that he does, but if he doesn't have enough or if more confidence is needed here in order for him to start making some plays and giving the Packers a chance to make some plays,
then he's going to have to start throwing some balls and letting the receiver do more of the work because, you know, 5 feet around you of radius of being open, all he's got to do is put the ball in a spot, the receiver catches it, and it's easy. And that's why everybody's so concerned about the Packers offense, because what they were doing the last few seasons was so easy and made it look simple. And they played against some pretty pedestrian defenses and secondaries, let's be honest. I mean, the Bears secondary hasn't been good for a couple of years. The Lions were okay last year, but historically haven't been that great. Same thing with the Vikings. And, oh, by the way, there's your division opponents. You see six of your games out of the season. So you got to take some of those things into consideration that's the level of competition that they're playing against. And this was the Denver Broncos, who have two of the best corners in the game. They can press man, play man coverage, and pretty much have it covered. They don't need safety help over the top because they've got it covered. They've got really good linebackers as well, the Broncos do. And so defensively, they kind of had the juggernaut response and kind of solution to the puzzle that is the Green Bay Packers offense. So perfect storm came together, and it really bit the Packers in the butt. So I think you mentioned Rodgers not looking right, and I said he doesn't look right coming out of the tunnel. He just had this look on his face like he wasn't his usual loose, comfortable, smiling, confident self. He just seemed like something was bugging him, something was up. Either he wasn't feeling well. I don't know. We don't know. Who knows? I mean, Mike McCarthy sure isn't going to tell us. He doesn't tell anybody anything anyway. So I just felt like he was just kind of down, and I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I really hoped that it was a one-week type of thing because, you got to roll with the guys that you got. The trade deadline is over now. It's passed. So it's official. The Packers ain't trading for anybody. They can still sign a free agent if they want to. You got a guy like Reggie Wayne out there, for example, and I'm not saying they need to go out and do it. There aren't many guys on the street, but these are the guys that you're rolling with. It's Randall Cobb, Davante Adams, James Jones, Ty Montgomery, Jared Aberderis, Jeff Janis. Those are your wide receivers, and that's who it's going to be from now to the end of the season. You can throw Richard Rodgers in there and Andrew Corliss when he comes back if he's available to play. So Rodgers has to figure it out. He's got to get comfortable with those guys, and I think that's the biggest thing. Now, that's maybe easier said than done, but, Rodgers seems to have this, a formula for when he considers a guy having had a good week in practice, and having earned the ball going his way during a game. Well, that's fine when you have Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, Randall Cobb, James Jones as your wideouts. But you got to have a new normal in terms of what a good week of practice was from a rookie and a young guy like a Montgomery or a Janis. The whole Janis thing, I'm not even gonna get into it. I mean, he's already proven to me that he's never going to be a huge part of this offense because he just can't seem to get pieces of it. But do I think that he may be worthy of a couple more looks and a couple more touches a game? Absolutely, because he's got speed. And I think you try to get these guys in space and let them do something with it. And as soon as Montgomery comes back and you finally get everyone healthy, I mean, geez, they waited long enough for Davante Adams to come back, and then Ty Montgomery can't play. So it's like you can't get the starters on the field at the same time. But once they do, one of those wrinkles, and you mentioned it too, I think you can start getting some of those. You can start getting Montgomery and Cobb in the backfield, creative ways to get them in space. And then your screen game starts going. And, wouldn't it be nice to see the screen game have a good day? Because I think that would serve two purposes. I think it would jumpstart the offense, and it would give the offensive line some confidence because the offensive line is the same guys, but they're just not dominating up front the way that they have been before. And, my last piece here to this whole thing is teams adjust, and you see how fastly that happens in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks don't scare anybody anymore. And I'm not just trying to throw bravado out there. The Seattle Seahawks 2 years ago struck fear into the heart of everybody. And even last season, when the Packers were headed to Seattle to play the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game, I didn't even want to watch that game. Jacob, you can attest to it. We talked about it during the week. I was negative about it. But now, no, because the league has caught up. I just feel like the Packers seem to be always a step behind. And that's what frustrates me is that you've got these innovative minds like Mike McCarthy and Tom Clements and some of these coaches that are some of the best in the league. And, they've got a great scouting department and, out looking for talent. But they don't seem to be able to find the right ways to make things happen. They just get stubborn and say, well, we're just going to keep doing what we do and hope that, we can get the results that we need. And, that goes into the definition of insanity, which we've talked about many times before. So, that's about it right there. Rodgers is just going to have to figure out ways. And if he throws a couple more interceptions, as Packer fans, we got to do our part. And we have to forgive that because you got to do something. Because what he did on Sunday against the Broncos, and I realize not every defense is Denver, it was not working.
No, and, you know, I got two things I want to touch on before we move on to the defense, which, believe me, there's plenty of material there as well to complain about, if you want to use those terms. One thing, you mentioned Jeff Janis, and I think that you hit on about the right thing. You know, there's a happy medium to those that are completely with the coaching staff of this guy doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and, you know, he can't be on the field because they don't trust him, and the people that are fully in the Jeff Janis cult, that he needs to be on the field and his measurables are Jordy Nelson and he can be Jordy Nelson if given an opportunity. I think there's a middle ground to that. And a lot of times we try and find one answer and refuse to get to the middle ground on that. The middle ground is Jeff Janis, you can find usage for him on the field. You can run him on those shallow crossing routes. You can run him deep, whether that opens somebody and forces the safety to respect his speed, but he doesn't have to be out there all the time. But in order to do that, it's going back to what I was talking about earlier of formation diversity. It's really hard to crack the top three wide receivers in this offense when they only use three wide receivers. You're not overtaking Randall Cobb. And they've talked about Devontae Adams, you're not overtaking him, and it's pretty clear that you're not overtaking James Jones either. So the only way to do this, to get him on the field and give him some opportunity, is more diverse personnel, more people rotating in and out, more formations, those kinds of things. And I think maybe I'm being just faithful by a fault here, but I think that the Packers are going to have to figure out a way, and I think they will figure out a way to do that, because it's not like they don't know how, because they've done it before. Mike McCarthy was one of the best formation coaches in all of football. And I still think that he can be. And I think that they can get that scheme into the offense. One other thing I want to touch on, and I hate to feel like I'm yelling at the people that listen to the show, because really, without you guys, this show is pointless. But one thing I do want to bring up, and I tweeted as much Monday morning after the debacle and everything, you know, kind of went into it. Why does Brett Favre have to come up every time the Packers lose a game with Aaron Rodgers? And what I mean by that is, why can't we just fully admit that we're spoiled and they are two completely different but still great quarterbacks? Because it seems like whenever the Packers lose a game like they lost on Sunday or a game against the Buffalo Bills last year, for example, I read the same things. And what I mean by that is, one, either Aaron Rodgers needs to be more like Brett Favre, or two, and this one really bothers me, is, well, Favre would have won that game that Rodgers played in on Sunday. Now, that's very possible. Could Brett Favre have won the game Sunday? I don't think so, but it could have happened. Sure, it's in the realm of possibilities. However, it's also likely that Favre could have thrown five or six interceptions and the final score of this game is 45-10 instead of 29-10. We need to stop bringing those things up because Brett Favre is not coming back, and this doesn't have to be a rivalry. Thanksgiving's coming up, guys. Brett Favre's coming home. Favre, Starr, Rodgers, they're going to be in the same building because they're all a part of the same thing. They all want the Packers to be successful, and they've been very successful with Aaron Rodgers. They were very successful with Brett Favre. You can have both of them. You can have great memories of both. Very similar to people unable to appreciate a great player in any other sport because when they were growing up, this guy was the best player in that sport. Now, I think the best example to use here, because they're two different players, Michael Jordan and LeBron James. I'm not going to say that one is greater than the other because I do think at the end of the day, Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player ever. However, LeBron James is very good as well, and they're two different players. You can appreciate the greatness of both without having to knock the other one down. So what I basically say all that to say is, stop saying Favre would have won a game like that, because he could have. He won many games like that, but I've also seen Favre throw six interceptions in a playoff game. I've seen him turn the ball over a bunch of times. He ripped my heart out and said it to me on more than one occasion throughout the time that I was a Packers fan in a much younger age. Now, the Packers have found ways to lose games with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback the same way, but they were different kinds of losses. So all I want to say is Favre was great. Rodgers is great. Let's just worry about that Rodgers is great now and stop trying to say that Favre would have won a game like that, because we don't know. Moving on to the defense, Jason, we talked about it early in the season. It was really a pleasant surprise, and we expected some growing pains early in the season, and those didn't surface. Well, now I don't know if it's growing pains or, you know, the defense sucks or some middle ground and those kinds of things. Sunday felt a lot like 2011. And what I mean by that is it didn't matter what the Denver Broncos did. They were successful. They ran the ball down the Packers' throat. Peyton Manning looked as if he'd found the fountain of youth. I was joking, you know, by the third quarter, I was messing with my mom a little bit, who's a Peyton Manning fan, saying that, oh, Peyton's arm will be tired by the end of the third quarter. And that kind of proved to be true a little bit. But even still, early in the game, he looked like the Peyton Manning of old instead of the old Peyton Manning. The Packers had no answer for Demaryius Thomas. Demaryius Thomas is a very good wide receiver. However, he had four catches for 100 yards, and it felt like that was all in the first quarter. Casey Hayward did not play well. Micah Hyde was not much better against the tight ends. Micah Hyde was getting run away from by guys like Virgil Green and Owen Daniels. And no offense to Virgil Green or Owen Daniels, but those guys aren't exactly Rob Gronkowski in terms of athleticism. The defense has regressed. That's back-to-back weeks now, back-to-back games, I should say. They've given up more than 500 yards. Phillip Rivers obviously did it in a much different fashion. There was no running game to speak of whatsoever, but he threw for 500 yards. The Broncos were very balanced. They were able to run or throw. And the pass rush, which we almost bragged about throughout the season, had disappeared. The Packers had a couple sacks against the Chargers, but they didn't come until later in the game. And unless my memory betrays me, they didn't sack Peyton Manning once. And I don't remember a lot of time of him having to move off the spot, as the new phrase is like to be said. They didn't push the pocket. It never felt like Peyton Manning was really in trouble throughout the night. And that's how you beat him, is put pressure in his face. That would have forced him into some mistakes. The one play that was made throughout the game, and there is no Mayfield play of the week this week, because the joke I put in the script was that would actually require somebody to make a play. But there was one play made. Congratulations, Arizona State alum, Demaryius Randle, with your first career interception. It was an athletic play on the sideline. It just happened well after the game was decided. That was the frustrating part. But Sam Shields left the game early. Quentin Rollins left the game after a special teams play. The scariest part of that game for me was Clay Matthews. That injury looked so much worse than what it turned out to be. And it was very clear that as soon as Matthews exited the game, the Broncos literally ran a stretch play right at where Clay Matthews would have been, and they scored a touchdown on it. They saw that he wasn't on the field. It felt like the NFC Championship game last year when Matthews exited. The Seahawks at that point targeted where Matthews would have been. The Broncos did the same exact thing. It was very frustrating to watch. Jason, is this the 2011 defense? Is it the dominant unit that we saw early in the season, or is it somewhere in between?
I don't even know. I mean, you know, all that good data and good information, I still can't answer the question. I mean, in 2011, that defense, they got a turnover when it didn't really matter anymore with Randall's interception. I mean, I was happy to see it. But, you know, the 11 defense might have played like that, but then they would have gotten another turnover or two somehow. You know, Matthews had a nice play on the screen. He stuffed the screen, and he chucked the wide receiver about 5 yards back. You know, I would – you know, if we were doing Mayfield play of the week, that would have been mine. You know, you could say the Lacy touchdown. But, you know, Clay Matthews actually showed a little bit of heart for a second there and in stuffing a play, and was probably very frustrated at that point because Denver was, like you said, doing everything offensively that they wanted to. And I don't know. The only thing I can say is that, you know, if you want a silver lining, is that, well, okay, it was two straight AFC opponents that are unfamiliar to Green Bay, and they're two very good quarterbacks in Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning. Then, you know, maybe what'll cure this defensive ails that they've had in terms of the yardage that they've been giving up is some of these lesser quarterbacks, which the way that he's been playing, unfortunately, is not going to be this week. Cam Newton has not fallen into the lesser quarterback category, at least the way he's playing right now. So I think that they're missing tackles again. They're reverting back to some of the fundamental problems that they've had the last couple of years. They had some injuries. Sam Shields went out. Quentin Rollins went out. I mean, yeah, Shields is a big piece of the defense, but is he a lifeblood to where it's gutting if he's not in there? Like when Aaron Rodgers got hurt in 13, he broke his collarbone. I mean, the team was very affected by it emotionally and talent-wise. I mean, did Sam Shields really make that much of a difference? I doubt it. So, you know, I mean, Denver's offense, it just seems like whatever the Packers are supposed to be able to do because of a weakness on the other side of the ball, they're just not doing. You know, against the Chargers, they were supposed to have all these sacks on Phillip Rivers because they had three starting offensive linemen out. Well, they didn't even get to Rivers until the fourth quarter. And they finally did, and they sealed the victory. Peyton Manning, they didn't sack him at all. I mean, Clay Matthews shoved at him once and didn't even get him on the ground. I mean, I don't think Peyton Manning's jersey ever touched the grass, with the exception maybe of the pregame warmups when he was stretching on his back. I mean, that was not a good showing by on either side of the ball. And unfortunately, you know, this is kind of the perfect storm. I mean, we used to, you know, fans, and we're harping on, well, why can't the offense and defense play a great game at the same time? Seems like it's either one or the other. Well, they won the first six games with that formula, and then they had the perfect storm of both sides of the ball not playing well, and they ended up losing their first game of the season. So I think the rookies are going to continue to get better. If Rollins is okay and can continue to play, because it was a neck injury, and you know, fortunately it wasn't a bad neck injury, and so he's not going to miss a whole lot of time. I'd be surprised if he plays this week, though. Those aren't anything to mess with. But and Demaryius Randle, those guys are going to continue to play well. You know, they talk about the wall. Hopefully they don't hit that and lose some steam late in the season, because the Randle's going to end up being the outside cornerback. Casey Hayward's not an outside corner, and they got to end that experiment. It's got to stop. So Randle, they need more than you think. They need him on the outside, and he needs to be the starting cornerback in the 3-4 and the nickel, whatever you have. You, he needs to be the guy opposite Sam Fields, Casey Hayward in the slot. And so, you know, those guys will continue to improve. The linebacker position is a little concerning because of the thinning depth. If Sam Barrington's been gone since week one, if Clay Matthews isn't 100%, then you've got a huge drop off in the middle there, because Nate Palmer had a terrible game against the Broncos. He almost had an interception and would have redeemed himself a little bit, but he's just so pedestrian back there. He's not anything that offenses need to worry about. And then besides that, you got Jake Ryan, who, you know, potential's never made a tackle in the NFL. You look at potential stats, it's, you know, it looks great. The picture might look fantastic. It might be a glamour shot. Zero tackles. So until he's ready to go at middle linebacker, the Packers got a huge hole. They got a problem. And offenses are going to scheme for that. Like you said, they know when Matthews isn't on the field, and all of a sudden offenses are starting to get chunks of yardage. And it doesn't get any easier in the NFL. I mean, these offenses are only continuing to evolve and improve. And even bad teams can still make plays and score a lot of points because you got the right coach in there. You know, the only thing that might be lacking is a little bit of talent, but, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. You're going to get your yardage, and teams are going to score points because they know where the bad areas are in the Packers defense. So, you know, Morgan Burnett came back. He really didn't make much of a difference. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, did he even play? I mean, you know, that's we hope there's a turnaround effort and they can get a victory in Carolina, because that will end a lot of questions about whether they can beat good teams on the road and whether they're okay and they can salvage this, you know, terrible effort and turn it. I shouldn't even use the word salvage because their season isn't over by any stretch. But, you know, stop the bleeding a little bit in terms of, you know, fan out crying and, you know, pouring out of concern. So that's about it there. I mean, you know, Dom Capers takes a beating for the scheme, his preparation, and I think he's been in this defense long enough that, you know, he maybe is too much a product of Mike McCarthy and the you know, the whole principle of it starts from the top down, and there's a stubborn factor there. Sometimes it takes him a little bit longer to adjust than it should, but, you know, I think we have a little bit of a talent disparity on defense. Maybe they're not quite as talented in some areas as we thought, and, you know, you lose some of those starters, and the drop-off is just huge.
Well, there's a couple things you mentioned that I do want to touch on. One, I'm going to throw on my coaching hat again, and I hate to do that because it makes it sound like I think I'm smarter than these guys, and I know I'm not. However, one thing that you mentioned that I agree with, and I said this earlier in the season, Demaryius Randle needs to play on the outside. That kid is good, and he's only going to get better, in my opinion. He, and from what my eyes could see, was the best defensive player on the field Sunday night. He had a pass defense that almost led to an interception and a decapitation of Emmanuel Sanders. He had the interception, like we mentioned. He's done nothing but play well since he has been given opportunities. Casey Hayward, like you said, he's not a boundary corner. He's a very good slot corner, and that's fine. One thing that I do wonder if they will try, and we'll see how the health of Quentin Rollins holds up, but if Rollins can hold up and continue to develop, I do wonder, they say Micah Hyde is kind of their guy for over-the-middle defense, tight end stuff, things of that nature. I wonder if maybe it's a better option to let Quentin Rollins play the slot and allow Casey Hayward to be the tight end person, because it's clear Micah Hyde is a good football player. He does a lot of things well, doesn't do anything great. He's a sound tackler. He's good around the line of scrimmage, but he's just not quick enough to run with some of these guys. And like I said, I mean, Virgil Green is not Rob Gronkowski. Owen Daniels is not Jimmy Graham. He just didn't play well. And he has, you know, some of the struggles that he has, there are some things he shouldn't be asked to do. And manning up on a potential pass catcher is one of those things. And Sunday we're going to talk about this. It's terrifying to think what Greg Olsen could do to Micah Hyde. I mean, he might set him on fire. And that's something I don't want to see. Now, Quentin Rollins, I'm guessing he didn't practice today, neither did Sam Shields. It's guesswork at this point, but I would guess if they didn't practice Thursday, I would anticipate neither of those guys playing on Sunday. So if that's the case, Packers are pretty thin at corner. Ladarius Gunter will probably be active in that scenario. And Gunter hasn't played a whole lot this season after a darling of a preseason, is the way to put it. So that, assuming relative health, be my adjustment, and maybe make Casey Hayward your tight end type just to get a little more speed on the field. Because the Packers defense, I mean, You mentioned Don Capers. One of the criticisms I've had of him is, and it could be, it's a Ted Thompson issue as well, is it seems like the same issues every season affect the Packers. They can't cover the middle of the field. They can't stop a good tight end. Their defensive line struggles up front against the run. Their inside linebacker position is pedestrian at best. And, you know, you mentioned potential never getting it done on the field. And that's a good point, because if it did, Ryan Leaf would be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And we all saw how that went. Ryan Leaf's potential ceiling at the time was projected to be higher than Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is arguably the greatest quarterback ever, depending on who you talk to, and Ryan Leaf is one of the biggest busts in NFL history. I love Jake Ryan, but it's time for somebody to make plays. Now, whether that's Nate Palmer or Jake Ryan next to Clay Matthews, they got to figure something out, because if Clay Matthews does go down, knock on wood, that was me knocking on wood, that middle of defense could be potentially horrendous. And by that, I mean the linebacker specifically. It's frustrating, and we're going to move on to Carolina now. And that's something that it doesn't get any easier from here. You mentioned, you know, the Packers are playing Cam Newton, and I know the numbers don't say that Cam Newton is playing very well. In fact, I looked at his numbers, and they're actually very comparable to Colin Kaepernick. And we saw Colin Kaepernick just got benched for Blaine Gabbert. However, I watched him play against the Indianapolis Colts, and that guy is fantastic. The plays he makes with the relative garbage around him, the offensive line in front of him isn't that good. The receivers around him are worse. I mean, Jeff Janis would be a starter on that team, and he is the Packers' fourth or fifth wide receiver, depending on the day. Ted Ginn, Cam Newton threw one off his back foot about 4 yards down the field, right in Ted Ginn's breadbasket. Ted Ginn dropped it. Carolina ended up winning anyways. Carolina is currently 7-0, and most of their games don't look impressive. In fact, there was a point, I think they were 4 or 5-0, and somebody mentioned them as an undefeated team, and I turned over and said, really? Like, I didn't anticipate hearing that. I had no idea that they were undefeated. I mean, the joke that I'm making is Cam Newton's doing things with Greg Olsen, Jason Perron, and Jacob Wessendorf playing wide receiver. And what I mean by that is receivers are pedestrian at best for him. It's Philly Brown, Corey Brown, whatever name he's going by these days, Ted Ginn, and my Michigan guy, Devin Funches. Funches hasn't made an impact this year. I just wonder what he would be doing if Kelvin Benjamin was healthy, because that team is very good. They are a good team all the way around, and that starts on the other side of the ball. And where that starts with is Luke Kuechly. Kuechly, in my opinion, is the best inside linebacker in all of football. They force teams to struggle around the ball, which is something the Packers have struggled with anyways, which will make them one-handed. Josh Norman has emerged as one of the top corners in all of football. There are some other things around them that they're susceptible to, but for the most part, they've covered it very well. Jason, where do you start with this Carolina team? There's so many things. It just seems like they match up with the Packers very well. What scares you the most about them?
Well, so, you know, negative Nelly rant to start off is whatever players are benign or not as good on the Carolina offense that the Packers, quote unquote, shouldn't be worried about are going to end up being the players that the Packers will need to worry about. So I'm looking at you, Devin Funches, who could potentially have a breakout game, because the Packers just, this is what they do. You know, they, you know, maybe they limit Cam, but all of a sudden, like, you know, they should cover Greg Olsen. They should make sure that he doesn't beat them and take him away and scheme for him because he's the best passing, you know, threat that the Panthers have. And somehow he's still going to catch 10 balls for 150 yards. And Mike Tolbert, I still have nightmares from that game in San Diego in 2011 when the Packers got gashed by Tolbert because they couldn't tackle back then. And they're going to see Tolbert this week. Jonathan Stewart, that running game. Oh, Carolina doesn't run very well. Well, the Packers seem to help teams kind of fix whatever is ailing them. And fortunately, Green Bay finds a way to win the game. But I'm not taking anything for granted here. I mean, Cam Newton, you know, the big thing that I wanted to say about Cam against the Colts, because, you know, it's the Colts, so their defense isn't horrible. You know, I think their issues have been more on the offensive side, and Andrew Luck just not playing like Andrew Luck of old or of the past. He's not old. Is just how much fun he looked like he was having, how loose he is. I mean, you looked at Aaron Rodgers coming out of that tunnel. That was not the Aaron Rodgers we're used to seeing. I mean, it looked so eerily weird to me to see him, kind of his demeanor, that I almost wanted somebody to, like, take a blood sample and just make sure that it wasn't his doppelganger, because that just didn't seem like Aaron Rodgers to me. But Cam Newton on Monday night just having so much fun. And that game was not in hand. I mean, they were driving to try to tie the game, take the lead. They lost the lead in overtime, and he had to drive them down to, you know, to get the winning score. And But he's still having fun, and he's playing loose, and they're going to be at home, and that crowd's going to be on their side. They're still undefeated. They're playing with a lot of confidence. They saw what Denver did to the Packers. They're not going to be intimidated in the slightest coming into this game. Josh Norman is playing out of his mind. So here's another situation where you probably got a cornerback here who's going to man up, you know, man up on, you know, I would assume it would be Devontae Adams on the outside. I don't see them moving him into the slot to cover Randall Cobb like Revis did when he was with the Patriots last year. So, you know, you essentially take away Adams again, who is supposed to be the legitimate deep threat the Packers are going to have. So they're going to have to find a way to get down the field with the shorter stuff. And, oh, by the way, like you said, Jacob, over the middle, there's this guy called Luke Kuechly, the best player in the NFL on defense right now. So it's going to be a long day for the Packers. And I'm not saying they can't pull it off, they can't get it done, because I think they can beat anybody still after the performance they played that they had last week in Denver. I still think they can beat anybody on any given day. But Cam Newton is going to be a huge problem. And last year, for some reason, I think the Panthers did the Packers a favor and kind of took Cam out of the game for the Packers. They didn't have to worry about them, and they ran the Panthers out of the gym at Lambeau Field. But it's a different story this year, and there's, you know, even though those wide receivers aren't great, still, a guy like Ted Ginn, he's got speed. He can get by guys and get by them and burn them deep. You know, you might see a problem there and see the deep ball come back to bite the Packers in the butt there. And you mentioned Greg Olsen. I don't even want to think about it. I mean, we had to deal with Greg Olsen every you know, twice a year when he was with the Bears, and he had some good games against the Packers. You know, he seems to have a couple big plays every game since he's been with the Panthers, too. You know, Micah Hyde is not good in coverage, so I don't know what the scoop is going to be or the story is. I mean, I don't know if you got to assign HaHa or Morgan Burnett one-on-one to cover Olsen just because you got to make sure you put a body on him. But this is a tall task for the Packers this weekend, and we haven't gotten to our picks yet, and I don't want to tip it, but not an easy game to predict and not an easy game to pick this week at all.
No, and one more thing I want to do. Ultimately, the discussion is going to be about what's wrong with the Packers, or did they fix some stuff? Passing game hasn't been good recently, and the running game hasn't been much better. We've talked about the offensive line struggles, some things that we feel like we could do to cure these things. One thing that I do find kind of funny, though, we have a running joke here at PackersTalk.net, Cheesehead TV, that kind of stuff. We call it play calling guy. And what that is somebody who complains about the play calling. And that's basically what it is. I mean, there's not a whole lot of way to explain that better than that, I don't think. But Tom Clements has been catching heat. I did think it was funny, some people suggesting that Mike McCarthy just has to be itching to take the play calling back over. Jason, do you think it's funny that the same people that last year were complaining about the play caller now want that play caller to take things back over? Because I do. And the reason I think it's funny is I don't think it's the play calling or the plays that are being called in the huddle, or no huddle, whatever, that are the problem. I think it's, one, a lack of execution, and two, I think it's a poor scheme. The Packers have run some things that I don't think are very beneficial to the personnel that they have. I've mentioned that before. I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, we're talking now about how last year Mike McCarthy absolutely had to give up the play calling because he was a terrible play caller, and there's no way that he should be calling plays for this team ever again. Do you think that it's funny that people want McCarthy to call plays, or are you one of those people that wants McCarthy to call the plays back, and that it's justified that Tom Clements has been getting the heat that he has?
No, it's ridiculous. It's just, you know, some people just need something to complain about. It doesn't matter whether it's legitimate or not. They just want to complain. They want to blame something. They want to, you know, make it sound like someone screwed up and that's the only reason why things didn't work out in their favor. It's impossible that our beloved Green Bay Packers got outplayed and possibly got beaten. They just made mistakes internally, and so maybe they need to go back to having Mike McCarthy calling the plays, and it's the old, like, okay, I guess it was better to have McCarthy calling the plays after all. But come on. I mean, you know, they're going to turn around as soon as he makes one bad call and he gives the ball to Kuhn at the one-yard line and he gets stuffed on a fourth down and they lose a game before they're, you know, outside lynch mob with torches in hand outside McCarthy's home in Green Bay. So, no, I mean, it's one game. They're still 6-1. I'm not trying to say, hey, everything will be A-OK this week. They may end up getting run out of the gym this week and blown out against the Panthers. I wouldn't count that out. That's not how I see it, but it certainly is possible the way the Panthers are playing on both sides of the ball, weapons or no weapons. So, no, I mean, this is an offense and a coaching staff and a scheme that obviously works. And the Packers have just kind of chosen their route. You know, Ted Thompson likes to put young guys in there, let them make plays and develop them and try to turn them into superstars. And, He's not going to go out there and sign the big name free agent. So Aaron Rodgers just said, you know, they found a way to make it work. They made it work for six games. They had some injuries. I still can't understand how you come in off of a bye week and after 2 weeks of preparation and lay an egg like they did in Denver. But you know, let's see how this week plays out and let's see how things go. Because you know, what are you going to say then if you're that guy, your play calling guy, and all of a sudden the Packers put up over 30 points and they win a game in Carolina? You're going to change your tune that quickly? That's called a knee jerk reaction, and then you kind of discredit yourself. And so then in that case, play calling guy, it's funny now. It's funnier then.
Absolutely funnier then. And it's kind of funnier now because people – it's really a vicious circle here, but it's funnier now because, like I said, the people that wanted McCarthy to give up play calling are now wanting him to take it back because it's not like he's just going to hand the play calling from Tom Clements to Edgar Bennett. If Mike McCarthy takes play calling responsibility away from Tom Clements, it's going to be because he's calling the plays now. But that's neither here nor there, and that's kind of a side note to what is the final segment of our show, and that is the prediction. We do game picks every week. My record last week fell to 6-1, as did Jason's. We both picked the Packers to win that game. We hadn't picked them to lose yet this year. That's why we were 6-0. 6-1 now. The Carolina Panthers will be at home. It will be a noon kickoff from Charlotte, North Carolina. Green Bay Packers have lost their last 9 games on the road against teams with a winning record. That stat terrifies me. I've mentioned that the Packers are now playing someone. They've been torched back-to-back weeks by quarterbacks that are more of the statue variety. Phillip Rivers is not going to move, and Peyton Manning is not going to make anyone think of Colin Kaepernick either. Packers are facing a mobile quarterback this week that's not going to throw the ball into the turf like Colin Kaepernick did. Cam Newton is very good. He's very capable of making plays with his legs and also capable of making plays with his arm. That scares the crap out of me. Offensively, like I've mentioned, until I see it, this Packers offense isn't good. They haven't been for about a month. That's a trend. It's a trend that can be reversed, but it is still a trend at the moment. Now, as I say this, they'll probably score 45 points and win the game somehow. But last year, the Packers beat this team 38-17. I think it was 38-0 at one point. At minimum, I know it was 24-0. I'm not sure if the Panthers scored. That game's kind of a blur to me at this point. But the Packers had Jordy Nelson back then. That game was at Lambeau Field. And this Panther team wasn't nearly as good back then as they are right now. This Panthers team is legitimate. They're 7-0. This game is an absolute must-win for the Green Bay Packers because they've discussed ad nausea since last year's NFC title game how important it is to them to have home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs. If they lose this game, they will be, in essence, 3 games behind the Carolina Panthers, 2 in the loss column, and 1 with the head-to-head tiebreaker that the Panthers will earn, or whoever the winner is, will earn with a victory this Sunday. One thing that can be a silver lining for you guys, it seems like whenever Mike McCarthy's teams face adversity, they always respond well. Think of 2010, 15 guys on injured reserve. 2011, the adverse situation is getting everybody's best effort, so on and so forth. 2013, Rodgers breaks his collarbone. Some good luck breaks their way, but the Packers still win the division that year. McCarthy's teams typically play well when their backs are against the wall, to use that old adage. However, all of the trends that I mentioned are not going in their favor right now. That's the only one that seems to be going in their favor at the moment. Packers haven't been good on offense. Carolina is good on defense. The Packers haven't been good on defense, and Carolina's offense has improved. Earlier in the week, if we had done this show on a Monday, I probably would have picked the Panthers to blow the Packers out. I've calmed down a little bit since Sunday night's result. I think the Packers will put up a fight, but ultimately I don't see them winning this game. I see Carolina winning 27-21. I think it'll be a close game, down to the wire, and the Packers' offense is unable to make a play at the end of the game. Carolina's defense shut the door. They moved to 8-0 and 3 games ahead of the Packers as they're sent spiraling into a stretch of 4 straight division games. They will play home against Detroit, at Minnesota, Thanksgiving against the Bears at home, and the following Thursday they will play at Detroit. And we'll talk about all those games to come up. Jason, the joke I had is you know the Panthers winning this game 54-0 or something like that. Of course, I think I'm joking, but am I?
I think Luke Kuechly wears number. Is he number 59?
That would be number 59, Luke Kuechly, yes.
59-0, Carolina, then. No, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, Jacob, because we have kind of similar concepts in our picks this week. Mine, and actually I screwed up. I was gonna bring a sound clip to play to kind of illustrate my pick, and you'll see this possibly if you take a gander at our picks column on Cheesehead TV in the next day or two, as we do every week.
So I picked the Packers last week over the Broncos, 31-30. I thought it would be kind of a shootout-like game. I mean, those aren't huge numbers, but, you know, over 30 points. And obviously that did not happen at all. So my perfect record picking games this year is over. My dream of going 16-0 is ended. And so now I'm just going to go for broke. And I'm going to quote George W. Bush and say, there's an old saying in Texas, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, I can't get fooled again. For those of you who are J. Cole fans, you know that line very well. It's in one of his current songs that's out. I'm taking the Panthers in this game because I need the Packers to show me something before I'm going to pick them again. That offense, you know, I like I said earlier, I'm not going to say it's not good, but it definitely is not great, and it's nowhere near where it needs to be. It's nowhere near where it should be. And after what I saw last week in Denver and the effort that this team put forth, I can't put my name behind them a second week in a row until they prove me wrong and they show me that they're worthy. So they're my team. I never give up on them. I support them, but I'm giving a little tough love this week. I have 31-23 Panthers. It's a road game. Cam's playing really well. He's playing loose. He's having fun. They did some good things against the Colts. I'm not comparing the Packers to the Colts, but I think Green Bay's defense and their offense, there's too many questions. And my key to it all, you said the defense shuts the door, the offense isn't able to make it happen at the end of the game. I think what's going to happen is Carolina's probably going to get a late turnover that's either going to seal the victory or it's going to, you know, I doubt they'd score on it. Hopefully they don't score on it. But, you know, if it doesn't seal a victory because Carolina's already ahead, I think that turnover is going to give Carolina the ball and a chance to score late. And that's what's going to put them over the top against the Packers. It pains me always anytime I pick against them. But, you know, like you said earlier, as writers and as those who discuss this team, we might be fans, but we do need to remain a little bit objective here and be realistic. And this is not an easy team to play in their building. So 31-23 Panthers, go out and prove me wrong, Pack.
There you go. Jason has a 31-23. I have a 27-21. We both like the Carolina Panthers to get to 8-0 this week. And hope like hell we're wrong, because that gives you guys something to make fun of us for, too. So that's, you know, that's what we want, ultimately, anyways. The more you make fun of us, that means we're probably wrong about something that we were negative about. So that's a good thing in this case. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Pulse of the Pack. You can follow me at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Send us questions, comments, concerns. Send us tweets at 3:30 after the Packers win, and be sure to make fun of us and let us know we doubted the Packers and we shouldn't have, you know, all that good kind of stuff there too. Want to thank our sponsors. Jason mentioned them in the intro, so I don't need to go through that, I don't think, but want to thank them for all that they do for us at our little network here. Check out Cheesehead TV. Those will have game picks, different articles, things of that nature, all kinds of compelling content there, all Packers related. And there's a lot of stuff there that you guys, I'm sure, will enjoy. Tell your friends about us, too. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. We ask that you give us a rating. We prefer a good rating if you think the show is actually good. That'll help us with all kinds of things in the future so we can do more for you. And that's ultimately what this is about. We care about our listeners. We want you guys to have the best show possible to listen to. Until then, Packers, noon against the Carolina Panthers, 7-0 against 6-1. It's an NFC showdown that could determine home field advantage throughout the playoffs, the big game. Get up, get excited. Let us know that we were wrong if the Packers win this game. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.